So to start out, can you please state your name, current position, and field of study?
I'm Stuart Weiss, or Stu. What was the second question?
Your position and field of study.
Stuart Weiss. My position is I'm chief scientist at the Creekside Center for Earth Observation, which is a small consulting firm, or freelance, I like to think of it. And my field of study is conservation ecology.
Ooh. So what specifically do you work on within conservation ecology?
Everything from meter by meter restoration of endangered plant populations up to regional scale conservation planning. The real central focus over the decades has been on endangered butterflies in the San Francisco Bay Area. And when I look at the scientific disciplines I have to work in, it's everything pretty much, which is what is great about AGU, is that I can learn about climate change, I can learn about atmospheric nitrogen deposition, I can learn about hydrology, and interact with real experts in the field. So, being an independent, I'm light and nimble and can find those little interstices where we can actually implement things on the ground. That's probably the most satisfying aspect of it, is like reintroducing a butterfly to a place where it went extinct, or increasing the number of an endangered plant, or helping direct land acquisition at a regional scale.
What initially sparked your interest in science, and what led you to conservation ecology?
Okay, goes back to the first Earth Day in 1970. I was 10 years old, and my dad was an anti-Vietnam War activist, organizing the Great Suburban Community. But then when Earth Day came along, it was like, yeah, this is what I want to do, because it's so obviously foul. You know, thinking back to what it was like then, you know, we tut-tutted China, but that's what we were like. So then I went to Stanford University. My freshman year, I found myself chasing checker spot butterflies through fields of wildflowers at Jasper Ridge Biological Preserve, and was like, okay, this is better than sitting in econ class. And I got a job in the lab, in Paul Ehrlich's lab. I was exposed to the full panoply of environmental science and environmental policy and environmental crises. And I just kept at it. And, you know, I was at Stanford for 20 years in various capacities. I ended up getting my PhD after working on the research staff for 10 years. And then in '99, I started working for myself.
And what's it like being an independent scientist?
It's fantastic. Although I like to say, you know, the boss is crazy, but also the boss is very lenient. And I have a lot of control over what I do, so unlike a lot of my colleagues of my age, I still get to do field work. A lot of scientists, in their late 50s are just not getting out in the field so much. But that primary contact with nature is really what gets me going. But then, being able to take that and the data you collect and do a lot of hardcore quantitative analysis on it. So I've sort of found my niche as when somebody has a really hard problem, I get a phone call, and I really like that.
I wish that I'd known that was an option when I was in school. I ended up in science journalism because realized that part of what I loved about science was learning about it and sharing it, and the other part was that I loved the field work, and it was my understanding that as you move up the ladder, you spend less and less time in the field, and what would it say if I didn't want to advance and leave the field? So that's really great that you still get those opportunities.
Yeah, you know, when you find yourself like climbing San Bruno Mountain just south of San Francisco with a butterfly net, collecting mission blue butterflies to repopulate it on Earth Day, it's kind of, it doesn't get better than this.
Are there any challenges that you've had to face in your career, either when you were at Stanford or now that you're working for yourself?
Yeah, the things that I thought were challenges actually ended up being the big opportunities. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to become a professor somewhere and stuff. And that didn't work out because I just did, it was so unconventional. And it's highly competitive situations, if you're outside the mold, doesn't necessarily work very well. And so, you know, once I didn't get an academic job, and that in retrospect, it was like the best thing that ever happened, because I can do conservation action, and I can commit myself to like, you know, long-term advocacy and science to move the agenda forward. So, for example, I've been working for over two decades on the conservation of the bay checker spot butterfly, which is listed as a threatened species, and I've been able to, you know, just bring to bear the science, but also my passion, and we finally found the big nexus for conservation, which turned out to be the impact of Silicon Valley smog on the habitat. So we're just south of Silicon Valley, the wind blows all the smog to us, so we're getting really high amounts of atmospheric nitrogen deposition. And I published a paper on that, and that was used as the best available science by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we leveraged that, you know, over about since 1999 when the paper was published. By 2013, we had a regional habitat conservation plan. That was the real nexus. And that's, AGU played a really big role in that, because I started off life as a butterfly population biologist. You know, how many butterflies are out in the field? But then I had to learn all of this really, really interesting but fiendishly complex nitrogen science. And AGU was just the perfect place to do that. And after a few years, I started organizing my own session. And this is our 16th year doing that session, and we were a centennial challenge. We were on demand, and we had three back-to-back oral sessions because we had so many abstracts, and then a big poster session, and it was just really gratifying, you know, to see the response of the community and, you know, have people say, yeah, I just love your session because I get to see what's happening upstream and downstream. And I get to network with all these great nitrogen scientists. So, yeah, it's been really, really gratifying.
Wow, that's quite an achievement.
Yeah, you know, my co-convener and I are just like, yeah, well, San Francisco next year. We just keep submitting the same session description. It like, seems to work. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
What are your plans for the future?
I'm going to continue the conservation work probably as long as I'm alive. Various capacities, and at some point I won't be able to climb the steep slopes of San Bruno Mountain very easily. Poor knees are starting to suffer. I just foresee finding really interesting projects. I mean, I'd really like to get the atmospheric nitrogen deposition kind of a lot more attention to it, because as a threat to biodiversity, I think it's more acute in a lot of places than climate change is right now, because it's so far out of bounds, and it's just a really major threat, you know, in California for sure. A lot of the, you know, little endangered plants that get overrun by weeds when you dump nitrogen onto the habitat. But, you know, it's starting to get a little more recognition, but There are so few cases where, like we've done in Santa Clara County, where you're getting mitigation at the appropriate scale. So I really want to push that. Yeah, you know, just kind of keep doing what I'm doing and seeing where it goes. Just always on the lookout for interesting things to do. You know, and I have to keep my 4 employees paid, so... So, you know, funding, of course, you know. But we do really well working off of small pots of money. And the fact that we get to, you know, do the primary conservation work out in the field. It's just so gratifying when the species you're working with, or habitat you're working with, like, responds to what you're doing.
It's nice to be able to actually see that change happening.
Yeah, you know, and I don't have the publish or perish imperative. But I still am, like, co-authors with a lot of people, so... But I don't have to do the senior authorship thing, which is nice, although I do have several papers that really need to be written.
So, I have a slightly unconventional question. You don't happen to hitchhike when doing your butterfly work, do you?
No.
Okay. Several years ago, I was at the North American Congress for Conservation Biology, and somebody had mentioned that there was a butterfly conservation biologist in California who would hitchhike from site to site, and that they were a very interesting person to speak to. So I was wondering if that was
maybe
you.
No, that's not me. I get to drive my high-clearance four-wheel drive Toyota pickup truck. Which I'm proud I actually used the four-wheel drive on it.
Gets you out to all the field sites?
Yeah. Yeah, I've taken it up even to 14,000 feet in the White Mountains. So, you know, I don't just work with butterflies. I do a lot of biophysical modeling, deployment of little temperature sensors. So I ended up getting in on a bristlecone pine project where the PIs wanted to understand what the temperature variability was in the tree line zone. So... they hired me as the Thermocron ringer, hired gun, and I was able to direct them how to deploy them and then how to analyze them so we can make a map of the temperatures, and they were able to pull apart the temperature-limited trees from the moisture-limited trees. That was great because we're in these remote mountains out in the Great Basin. When I start looking at the places where I've been able to work, it's just I'm so lucky to, you know, be able to do what I do. And just having all the quantitative skills, and a lot of GIS and statistical modeling, but also just being a good naturalist and really enjoying natural history. It's a great combination, and I'm just really glad it turned out the way it did.
It sounds like you were able to carve out a really great career for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, just, you start getting the, you know, kind of administrative overhead and, you know, stuff running the business, but fortunately my staff are just fantastic. They're really good at managing me, because they know when it gets to the point where, you know, okay, Stu needs to do the analysis here, or, you know, Stu needs to go talk to the client because he's the heavy hitter here.
And is there one message you would like to share either about yourself or science?
Give me a moment to think about that. I'll say that being able to use science in the broadest sense to try and stem the tide of environmental degradation and the kind of dismantling of the Earth's ecosystems at a local and regional scale, where you actually have some leverage as an individual or a small group of individuals. All conservation is local in that sense. So just getting involved at a local scale, you're much more likely to see results.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.